Hey everybody, welcome back to There Is No Offseason. It's BP's only daily dynasty podcast, proud member of the Baseball Prospectus Podcast Network. Real quick off the top, if you have a minute, get at us on any of the channels with a rating review. Drop us a line at Tino Podcast on Twitter, tinopodcast@gmail.com, patreon.com/tinopodcast. We always appreciate the feedback, especially if it's glowing. I'm Mark Berry. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus. With me, as always, he's the fantasy editor at BP, and sadly for the rest of the league, he was not picked up in the Rule 5 draft, but that just means he gets to stay with us. It's JP Breen. JP, what's up, buddy?
Looking forward to another developmental season in the farm system at BP. I'm going to wait for my big league shot, but, you know.
Well, you have to have some suspicion at this point that it's just service time manipulation, right?
I would just prefer to think that I'm somebody with big league quality that is just on an extremely deep roster instead of being traded to a team that's not all that good to be put in the big leagues.
Yeah, we're just waiting until May 15th to give you the call just so we can make sure that you make as little money as possible in your prime years.
Is that why Brett continuously emails me and says that I need more seasoning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and working on your accent work and your punctuation and most notably your defense.
Yeah, it's just I don't know what that means, right? I don't know what that means. No, it's good. It was nice to get some interesting trades and stuff coming on. I had completely forgotten about the Rule 5 draft, so, you know, because of, like, the winter meetings weren't really a thing. So normally I get, like, super stoked about the Rule 5 draft because is there anything that, like, dynasty managers like more than, like, fringe dudes getting traded around the team that will never stick?
Yeah, so we can all be like, ooh, I like this fit.
Or, right.
Oh, that's a good pick. I can't believe. I mean, I was guilty of it. I said that a couple times with some people that were plucked off the Indians, off Cleveland's team. Let's just get into the Rule 5 draft then.
Yeah. I was gonna say, because it's always like one of those things in my head for like the first year player supplemental drafts that we've got coming up. It's always in my head, I'm like, oh, is this Rule 5 guy somebody that I might try to take in like the fourth or fifth round? Because if they stick, maybe it's gonna work. And there were actually, I mean, when I saw it, I was like, there were a couple of names that I was actually at least interested in, right?
Right. Yeah. There were some that. Maybe most dynasty players would be familiar with, which isn't always the case, I don't think. The Pirates took Jose Soriano first. Arguably the best prospect left unprotected, according to Jeff's brilliant Rule 5 write-up that's on BP's site right now. And I may or may not have just read that first sentence of his recap verbatim. I don't know if it really matters because of the Pirates and what are you going to do? But do you have any Soriano thoughts?
Not too much. It's one of those things that you're like, I think normally, I guess I should say, like, normally I would say anybody making a big jump to, like, from A-ball to the big leagues, you know, you're just like, oh, there's no way that's going to stick. There's no way that's going to work.
Right.
But we did see that quite a bit, actually, in 2020. Mm-hmm. We saw that from a lot of pitchers in particular. So it is one of those that I did wonder if more teams were going to potentially target low-level A-ball guys and just kind of be like, we saw in 2020 that, you know, some of them can actually hold their own a little bit more than we thought. Obviously, you know, Jose Soriano is not the same as like Bubic and stuff like that in terms of being able to make that jump. But we also saw lesser heralded guys be able to make the jump from A-ball as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I would imagine that Soriano probably comes out of the bullpen for Pittsburgh, but he's at least somebody that it does, you know, it's one of those things where, right, it's a name you know, and it's a name you've kind of like moved for. But it's not like the Pirates don't have space for players.
He's also a little bit easier to hide, too. I don't know exactly when. He's coming off Tommy John. I don't know when exactly he'll be able to throw, and the Pirates might push that back to keep him on the disabled list as long as possible.
Yeah.
But I would guess, like, May or June. So if you're pushing it back 6 or 8 weeks, hide him on your roster if need be.
I was going to say, yeah. So, like, what do you know the rules in terms of?
It's a DL? Certain. So it's if it's a certain number of games they have to be active for over 2 years if you put them on the IL for any period of time.
Okay,
because I forget the exact number, but
because I remembered with Wei Chung Wong with the Brewers when they ended up taking him, they, you know, they liked him in terms of an overall pitching prospect. They had seen him down in spring training, and I didn't think that he had actually really even been on a complex ball by the time they took him, and they tried to hide him in the bullpen as long as possible. They basically pitched him like once every 3 weeks, and then it was June or July that they were like, oh, shoulder fatigue, and put him on the IL. So I know that I knew that there is something in which you have to be active for a certain amount of time and you can't just like IL somebody the whole time. But I do wonder if that's a little, I didn't know if it was different when you're taking somebody like Soriano who just like clearly needs to be on the IL versus like manufacturing a reason.
Yeah. The Angels did this for like, I know it was the Nationals. Somebody claimed Elvin Ramirez from the Mets and just kept putting him on the IL over and over for over like the course of 2 years, but finally had to return him. Mm. And, you know, anytime you can play weird roster games to try to keep Elvin Ramirez, I guess you have to do it, but.
Yeah. I mean, that's savvy if you ask me. but yeah, I was going to ask realistically if like, let's say we're talking about a non-injured guy. All you're really looking to do if you're trying to hide somebody is you want them to float in the bullpen or wherever you have them for the year, just so you can have more flexibility in what you decide to do moving forward, right? Whether you can just pluck that or put them back into the minor leagues the following season.
Elvis Luciano is like the most extreme example of this, and he only got into 25 games in 2019. So,
okay.
He's probably the least major league ready. I mean, it's tough to say, but he's certainly the youngest player I think ever taken in the Rule 5 draft. So literally once a week, basically.
Yeah, I thought I remembered the Padres doing this a few years ago with like Luis Torrens and...
Yeah.
It's harder with position players.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they did it with two different position players. I don't remember the second one. Off the top of my head.
Outfielder for the Cardinals. I don't remember his name either.
No. Okay. Yeah, so I think that Soriano is somebody when you already have, I don't know why that was tough for me to say, but when you already have somebody who's throwing kind of mid-90s and you already know as a power curve, like, they can function as a bullpen guy.
Sure.
Like, they might struggle at a time, but it's not like the Pirates really care if they win anyway. Right. When the Brewers were doing it with Wei Chung Wong, they were, like, trying to compete at the same time, which is why it was kind of weird.
Yeah, it's a tough balance.
And so, but when you're somebody like Pittsburgh and you're just like, we kind of like this long-term, we've got roster spots, we don't actually care if we win, and it's not like we're going to spend money on, you know, big league arms anyway, we might as well just use this as an opportunity to stash an arm we like.
Well, the Tigers are in a similar situation with maybe not expecting to win many games, but they're going to try and do this with a position player. They took Akil Baddoo third in the Rule 5 draft
also
from
also coming
Twins.
Off Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, also coming off Tommy John. Baddoo was like a legit thing.
Yeah.
Coming off the 2017 season, he was okay in 2018 in A-ball. And then just really struggled in 19 and kind of fell off the dynasty radar there. But he's going to go from the stiffest competition that he faced is high A, and then he'll be on the Tigers roster, ostensibly, at least for the time being. Is that somebody that you see that you would take a flyer on? I know I've had him in a few spots, and I may have cut bait at this point with the injuries and the kind of step back, but would you take a flyer on a guy like Baddoo?
If there was nobody else that I liked that low, but I would much rather take, you know, I would much rather take Baddoo and go with kind of like a power speed dude in, say, you know, your fifth or sixth round of the supplemental draft and try to, you know, roll with it the entire year, than go with some random rookie ball dude who is like still going to have a 5-year lead time and maybe has as much risk as Baddoo anyway.
Akil Baddoo or Parker Meadows, since they're in the same system. And Meadows was the 10th best prospect in the Tiger system, and I actually thought about that after they picked him, who I'd take, Baddoo or Meadows.
Well, who wrote...
I did.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure you did, so I was going to defer to you on that.
I would say Meadows, just based on Baddoo coming off the injury, off surgery.
I think that's right. I think that would be my reasoning as well.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't feel great about it, and it's not like Meadows for sure.
Not necessarily a question you want to be asking about your system in the middle of a rebuild either.
Yeah.
But at the same time, right, like they've got plenty of good arms coming up in the first place, and if you can get some arms on the cheap, if you can cobble together some kind of offense and you can spend money on a couple of big bats, which, you know, spend money. But it's still one of those things, too, that, like, there is a path there rather than, I mean, I don't want to pick on the Pirates too much, but it's like, there's at least a path that I see for Detroit that is like much easier for me to recognize than Pittsburgh.
Man, I feel bad. I feel bad for Pittsburgh fans. Anyways, who else? any other names that you like that got taken in the Rule 5 draft?
Any names that I like? Yeah, Zach Pop.
Oh, well, I was going to say, okay, yeah, maybe I should be more specific. Any other names that you think are fantasy relevant?
Not really is kind of the
Will Vest short answer, is kind of right? Cool. Is kind of a good name too.
It's a good name. It's I kind of have been coming back to something that Mike Gianella has been writing about all offseason, really, mm-hmm. thus far, is kind of the underappreciated and very real fantasy value of middle relievers now. And so in that way, I do think that there are some guys in this that like have potential to be kind of power arms. And if something breaks right, or they develop a breaker a little bit more, or they throw strikes, or they get put in the right situation, like they can have some kind of bullpen role in which you can see how it would work. But at the same time, what we've been talking about throughout is like, yes, middle relievers do have more fantasy value than we've expected. You're not going to go in and take some kind of middle reliever in your supplemental draft and try to take a double A middle reliever because you're hoping in 3 years he's got a middle relief role that gets you some stuff. Like, just go and get your middle relievers off the waiver wire for free.
Yeah.
So I do think that some of these guys, like, if they stick as an arm in a bullpen and they can strike some guys out, like, yeah, I mean, maybe there's like a small percent chance that like some of them become a useful middle reliever in deep leagues, especially, you know, like NL onlys or AL onlys or something like that. But I would think, for me, dynasty wise, the only person that I would really be interested in going for is Baddoo.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was thrilled when one of Cleveland's outfield prospect-ish guys, Kai Tom, who has just been like a fringe quad A guy for a while. It's like when you can take outfielders from Cleveland, the team that is just overflowing with outfield talent, like, you know, you got to make sure to make that happen. So good luck in Oakland. And someone is going to play outfield in Cleveland this year. I just have pretty much no idea who it's going to be.
Kai Tom is such a Oakland thing, too, right? Like, your dude in AAA who, you know, people are just like, we're not really sure this works in the majors, but has been, like, productive enough. But I will say, like, one of my favorites was when Tyreek Reed got picked up by Boston. Like, those were in the minor league, but I saw that, and I was like, oh, Tyreek Reed, man. He was a couple of years ago that everyone was like, that might be light tower power. I don't really have much more to say about that other than, you know, I kind of liked Tyreek Reed for a while, because if you're going to talk to me about somebody who's, you know, 250 and has hit a bunch of homers in the minors, let's go.
Yeah, and really, The Rule 5, I would say, outside of the teams that are just overflowing with talent and you can't protect everyone, it's kind of what we've been saying all along with, well, you should probably listen to the team when they're telling you they don't really like this guy, maybe as much as the rest of the fantasy community. And that'll bring us to a trade that happened this week with Nate Lowe, who just the Rays were like, nah, you know what? G-Man Choi is good enough. And he's good enough. But we don't really want to bother with Nate Lowe. Well, they don't have to anymore. He got traded to the Rangers for Heriberto Hernandez, Aslevis Basabi, Alexander Ovales. So naturally, I want to talk about Aslevis Basabi first. What are your Basabi thoughts?
I don't have well-developed Basabi thoughts. So I will defer to your expertise.
Now let's talk about Nate Lowe.
Okay. So I think the one thing that we kind of get with the Rays is not so much that... I know it kind of goes against a little bit what we've been talking about, especially kind of the whole year, but I actually don't think this is a reflection of the Rays kind of thinking that that Nate Lowe doesn't have a big league future. I think it's much more a reflection of the Rays being like, look, we can get anybody to play first base. And this is a way for us to be able to get more talent into our minor league system. And most likely it says that they really like Heriberto Hernandez. And I wouldn't be so quick to kind of write off Nate Lowe. I think that we've just seen the Rays over a long period of time be like, we don't need to invest in first base. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. And I think, well, I was trying to get cute with the segue and, maybe it wasn't the best idea. I don't think that Nate Lowe's a write-off either. But I do think that he's going to see a spike in perceived value, pretty much across the board that mm-hmm. I don't know necessarily if that's going to be good or if he's going to be able to produce the results that will go hand in hand with that value spike.
No, but the value spike is much more about opportunity than it is right. Skill, right?
Sure. Well, and it's about when I think there are a handful of these guys when they just get held down and you don't see them come up at all, or they come up sparingly and have some success, you hear the rumblings of, oh, well, if so-and-so would just play all day, he'd be one of the best first basemen, using Lowe as an example, in fantasy. And you just hear like restlessness from people who likely have somebody like Nate Lowe stashed in the minors or stashed on the bench waiting for him to get the call, thinking that you made this really smart pick. I don't know if Lowe's that guy. I think he's in a better spot, sure, because he's going to play. And they've already said that he's going to enter the season as the starting first baseman. But I mean, like, I just don't know what you're looking at as a bottom line. He might hit some home runs, great, but I don't think he's going to hit for high average, and he'll probably strike out a lot. And what do you really have in that situation?
Yeah, I'm not ready to say that Nate Lowe can't hit for average. I don't think he's going to hit 300, but I'm not actually convinced he can't hit 265, 270. Mm-hmm. Just because he's not gotten any shot in sure. the majors for 2 years. And even when he has played, it's been very sparingly, or it's been in some kind of weird platoon role, or he's played for a week and then has been sent down. It's one of those situations that it's kind of the best case scenario for Lowe, in which he is going to have every day at bats, and it's going to be for a team that doesn't really expect to compete. So if he struggles, they're going to roll with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I guess we're talking about less than 250 plate appearances in his career. So.
Well, it's 250 plate appearances in 70 some games, which yeah. means it's like one or two at bats in a game. And then he just like continuously moves around. And it's not like, yeah, I guess he's been striking out, 30 to 35%, but his swinging strike rate, if we want to look at that, is under 11%. He hasn't really been chasing much. He hasn't really swung much. And it seems to me to be a scenario in which he's just is kind of like working long at bats and just gets kind of put into a spot where he maybe needs to be a little bit more aggressive. But I also don't think that we're looking at, you know, I know in 2018, everybody got super stoked because he hit like 350 for a couple of different levels. But I still think he is somebody who is more valuable in on-base percentage leagues than he is on average leagues. But, you know.
Do you think he would be, he can be a mainstay in the top 10 of fantasy first baseman?
Probably not.
But he could check into that range every, you know, a season here, a season there, but he's probably not a fixture.
I wouldn't imagine he's a, I just think first base is still pretty strong, like even if it has moved back. But for example, like, do you want Nate Lowe or do you want Evan White?
Nate Lowe.
Yeah. Do you want Nate Lowe or do you want... Oh, who's Brandon Belt?
That's probably a... I would probably roll the dice on Lowe just in case he turns out to be good, but that's probably the range that I'm looking at for him.
Yeah, so that's kind of in my head. I'm like, he might hit for more power than Belt. I don't know if Belt is, you know, somebody who potentially hits for more average or something, but like, for me, I'm like, it's kind of Brandon Belt, Eric Hosmer range in terms of what I would perceive his value as. That's not overly exciting, but it is useful. And so like, if you're, you have him on your team and you get some people that are going to value him a little bit higher than that, like I would explore trading him. But at the same time, when you are trying to acquire somebody, don't, especially in deep dynasty leagues, don't just discount somebody because he might not be anything more than an average guy.
Sure. Yeah. The like, deeper the league, still, the more useful a guy like Lowe is going
to
be.
Yeah. And like, yes, you would like him to be your corner infielder and not your starting first baseman. But at the same time, he is a potential dude who's just going to be an accumulator because he's going to hit in the center of that lineup for a long time. And I mean, a long time in terms of like the next couple of years, he's going to get a lot of at bats where he might be able to. Yeah, maybe he hits 250, he hits 20 homers, but like drives in 75 and scores 70, right? Like that's still useful.
Right. Do you want to talk about another trade or do you want to talk about another first baseman that is better in OBP leagues that could drive in some runs and hit a few homers?
You talking about Heriberto Hernandez?
I'm not. I was talking about... The other notable trade and or shifting to Carlos Santana.
Okay, well I'm gonna stick with the low deal first.
Okay,
because Hernandez was one of the hottest dynasty names last year. Like, I think he got a lot of. Basically, once FanGraphs put him as number three on their list, I think he just got massive, massive buzz.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're looking at him, what is kind of the range that you are thinking about Hernandez in terms of dynasty value?
So he's a guy that I think will hit for average, and he's one of those profiles that I find myself drawn to of the high walk. Like he hasn't. Like he played three games in low A and just hasn't played elsewhere, like hasn't played above that. But he has that high walk, a little bit higher strikeout rate than you'd like, but can do a lot of stuff across the board. Not particularly good at stealing bases, but just big power. He's somebody that I would be pretty excited about trying to go out and add. Usually when these sort of guys get traded, and especially when they get traded to a team that's perceived to be smart like the Rays, I think that his stock will spike also. But I don't necessarily think it's not warranted in Hernandez's case.
Yeah, I think for me, Hernandez is exciting just in terms of the bat. If he's one of those guys, again, right, if he can somehow play enough games at catcher, which... I don't think too many people are excited about that opportunity, but
no, I don't. Yeah, I don't think that that'll.
But at happen. The same point, right? They're saying like the bat is somewhat legit, but I also think that that shows for me, Hernandez was an example of how the dynasty community can be moved by one or two prospect lists.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're not experts by any stretch of the imagination, the vast majority of us have not seen these people play. Vast majority of us don't have connections into teams where we can ask, you know, major league front office folks what we believe in it. So it's like generally everybody reads two or three lists and they're able to go on that. And so when Hernandez was moved onto it, he just kind of blew up. But at the same time, like, I think I'd have him in my, I think he's a solid top 200 for sure. Maybe top 150 dynasty prospect.
Yeah, that's fair. I think, and especially he's going to be the better in fantasy than reality prospect, I think, just because the things that he does are easily translatable. You don't have to worry about where he's going to play on defense. It's likely going to be in the outfield, and he doesn't have to be necessarily a very good outfielder. He's got some pop and can hit, so I think he's a better like fantasy option than potentially real life. But I think that's probably, I haven't sat down with trying to make an off-season list yet, but that's probably in the range that I would be thinking about a guy like Hernandez.
So when you are you, first of all, should I say, is, are you like worried about anybody else in the deal?
I think Basabe's interesting, but I think that everyone else is like all of the guys that the Rays got are, you know, far away where we're not going to know really until we see him play again, you know? Yeah. How about you? Anybody else stand out?
I mean, I still think that Basabe is like one of, I mean, he's a high variance guy, right? Like, he's not anybody that you're really going to go and try to get, right? He's a middle infield dude. He, by all accounts, seems to be pretty, pretty athletic in terms of his ability to run and things like that. It doesn't seem like he's got the ability to hit for a ton of power now, but that is kind of what you're betting on.
Sure. Yeah. At that age.
But at the same time, right? Like, he's not really he's not like a top 400 dynasty prospect. Like, he's not somebody that I'm going to be looking at for that, but he's at least like, to me, it's guys like that where I see it. And a month ago, would I have ever been thinking about him? No. Now he's like one of those guys that I was like, put him on a watch list and see how he does. But by all accounts, it seems to me that like Hernandez for the past year and a half is like, you can find some people in major league organizations that just flip and love him. I think is basically what it comes down to. Whether or not that is widespread, who knows? But I think it's very much, it depends on who you talk to. It was a little bit like when I would talk to some people about Corbin Burnes when he was coming up with the Brewers. And like in general, mm-hmm. right, it was like, oh, he's interesting. But you could find one or two people who loved him.
Yeah.
And we're like, this dude has like sneaky front of the rotation upside if it comes together. And you're like, okay. And the fact that that's not widespread means you kind of tamp it down a little bit, but you can talk to one or two people who see it. And I think that Hernandez is one of those guys that it's like, if you talk to the right person, you can just get a massive scouting report on who mm-hmm. he is.
And it's the variance guy, right? Like you get some of the guys and they're the guys that tend to be at the top of these sort of lists that are just like, okay, like I can see it. And even if this person isn't the best of the best, there's a role for them and there's like an everyday job for them. Like Hernandez is like, all right, if it hits, he's going to be up top, but a lot of things would have to go right for him to hit that peak. Like the floor is a lot lower for this sort of mm-hmm. guy, but when he hits, like when these guys hit, like it's a big hit.
Well, and I will say that to me, Hernandez is one of those guys that it's like, there are some questions about his physical attributes, like right in terms of mm-hmm. like how he looks and how it's going to play and defensively what it looks like. But we see this across the league, from what I've read, and again, right, it's just what I've read about it, it very much seems to me that he's a TrackMan superstar, right? Like, that yeah. he is just, like, the production has been good, but, like, it's supported by some pretty massive TrackMan numbers, which, if you are somebody who believes in that pretty strongly, or if you're in an organization that loves it, right, which, you know, turns out maybe the Rays are one of them, that it can turn into kind of a data led, I don't want to say like spreadsheet led, but like if you can allow TrackMan to kind of like whittle down your prospect list into some people that are interesting, and then you can go see them and you can look at the production, you can do all the background stuff on it. But it seems to me like, yeah, Hernandez is one of those TrackMan guys.
Mm-hmm. So where do you want to go next? Do you want to talk about the White Sox, the Royals, or the Angels?
I don't want to talk about the Angels.
Okay. Raisel Iglesias is probably going to be a good pitcher, unless just the Angels of it all gets to him and his arm falls yes. off. Moving on. Why are the White Sox?
They are here to try to make everything fun somehow not fun. Right? Like
that's a really good way of putting it.
There's so much I want to really love about them. And then I'm like, why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they made a couple moves this week. One I liked for this year. One I didn't really understand for this year, and one I thought maybe questionable 5 years down the road, but you know, YOLO, right? Like, fuck it. Let's talk about, it's more fun to make fun of the White Sox, so let's start with Adam Eaton. Your platonic ideal of a dude that's, you know, fine. And he's like the first, if not the first, one of the first free agent outfielders off the board. Mm-hmm. And he's fine. Like, he's fine. But there has been a reputation that has followed Adam Eaton of not necessarily being the most fun guy to play baseball with. I know that in his introductory, one of his introductory media appearances, he hung up on the radio host because they asked him if La Russa would have a hard time identifying with his younger teammates, which seems like, you know, off to a bad start.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, why are you asking somebody who hasn't even showed up that question?
Yeah, but why would you get so mad about it?
Because, well, like,
it's super easy. You'd be like, ah, well, I haven't been in there yet. I don't know the dynamic of the locker room. Yes. But, you know, I do know that Skip has won a lot of games, and he's done so with young players, and I'm excited to see excited to meet all my new teammates and see how everything 100%. Plays out. It's super easy. It's super easy.
And I'm not saying that Eaton shouldn't have handled it better. He absolutely should have. And
I mean, it sounds like you're justifying the hang up.
Good. But at the same time, what kind of question are you asking? Like, this is an introductory thing. Like, if you want to ask him that in a week, fine. Like, what is the point of it? Because basically what it very much seems is it's sometimes you've got journalists who are like, I've got this article written in my head. I need this quote for this thing. Can you answer this question? And you're like, what does it have to do with anything? Yes, Adam Eaton should have, you know, handled it better. Yes, he shouldn't, you know, there's no need to hang up on whomever to do kind of whatever, right? But at the same time, like, you can also ask better questions and understand what you're there for. So
what do you think about Eaton? It's, I think that maybe run production wise, it's not terrible for fantasy, but he was pretty dreadful in the abbreviated 2020 season. So I don't know if you're just banking on him going back to his career before that of being, you know, pretty much fine. Yeah. Is he's got to be like OF four for you at this point, at least?
I don't really understand the distinctions between those. Like, I don't really know what an OF4 is and an OF5 is.
Okay.
Like,
I just mean, is he's not, you don't want him as one of your top three outfielders on your team.
I mean, I think it depends on what you're going for. I actually like Adam Eaton as a player a little bit more than some. I don't put any stock in his 2020 at all, to be fair.
Okay.
Yes, he was like, his power numbers were just about the same. His ability to steal bases was just about the same. Yeah, he hit .226. He also had his lowest batting average on balls in play by 34 points in his career, and it's, sorry, quick math, 72 points below his career average. I don't expect he's going to hit .220 again. So I would imagine he is still going to be your .270 to .290 player. He's going to hit 12 to 15 homers. He's going to steal you 15 bases, and that is just what he is.
Okay. Yeah, I think, yeah, he'll be fine. I wouldn't really want him to do more. I wouldn't really want him to ask him to do any heavy lifting on my fantasy team or my real life team. I wonder if a lot of, and this is kind of what I was thinking, if he's the first guy off the board and you commit to $15, $16 million for 2 years, I forget what it was, but inevitably, the market is flush with decent, not great options. Mm-hmm. You have Springer at the top, obviously, but otherwise, I just sort of think the strike while the iron's hot is not really a good thing to do unless you're going for one of the big guys. Would you rather have Adam Eaton or Robbie Grossman?
Oh, I'd rather have Adam Eaton. Yeah.
Really? Okay.
I mean, to me, I just think of Adam Eaton as a really solid Brett Gardner type. And like Brett Gardner is somebody that consistently gets jobs, and like everybody says that he's not going to, you know, he's like, oh, you know, you don't want him starting in left field a bunch. And then, oh, look, he got 550 plate appearances and was actually quite good.
Well, would you rather have Adam Eaton or Brett Gardner?
I'd rather have Adam Eaton.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, I understand, maybe I'm like, I don't know, I guess I haven't thought about it that much. Maybe I'm like the high guy on Adam Eaton.
You might be a number one Adam
but,
Eaton.
Like, seriously, every single time, and injuries are a legitimate concern, don't get me wrong, he's been injured a lot, but in every single year that he has gotten at least 600 plate appearances, he has had 14 plus homers, he has had 14 plus stolen bases, and he's hit .280 every year. And it's okay. And like in 2018 when he got hurt and only had 370 plate appearances, he was on pace for all of that and he hit .300. Like, he is what he is, and it's not impressive. Like, it's one of those things that if he were not 32 and he were 25, everybody would talk about how he's, like, super sneaky value.
Well, that and that happened, right, when he got traded to Washington. It was, like, he got that prospect haul, and it was, oh, you're trading for super sneaky value and outfield defense, and he's, and his, like, team-friendly contract. It was all those things, right? And then he just was Adam Eaton, and, you know, probably worth whatever his contract was, and is fine, and that's what you're getting, and he's not gonna wow anybody. He's just, you know, not bad.
And I have come to understand in my kind of dynasty baseball career, which
illustrious.
I was
going to
say
career.
It's whatever the opposite of illustrious is. but it's one of those things that I guess I am much more, like, I place a lot of value in just guys who are there and solid.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you look at, so I'm just kind of pulling up his numbers here, every single big league year until this past year, well, aside from his rookie campaign in 2013, every single year he has had a DRC plus of at least 102 until last year when it was 90, which if it was 90 last year and he hit .226, that should tell you that DRC was a little bit, like, he's probably better than you think. but it's just, he is, he is solid. He is, to me, I only ever get worried about Adam Eaton in terms of injuries. But otherwise, I mean, I will say that I think I own him in three leagues. Or, well, I rostered him
in... that doesn't surprise me at this point.
I think I basically picked him up off of waivers in like one or two leagues too. Yeah, I just think he's super solid. If you're going to get me a career 282, 360 guy who's going to, you know, in a full year in which he's healthy, is going to get me 90 plus runs plus 15 stolen bases, I'm on that every year.
Would you rather have Adam Eaton or Eddie Rosario?
I'd rather have... Oh.
And now, I like, we'll caveat that as Adam Eaton was a two-year deal. Like, let's say Rosario wants three, four.
Well, I was going to say, the reason I paused is if I'm a big league team, I want Adam Eaton.
Mm-hmm.
If I am a fantasy team, I probably want Eddie Rosario. Eddie Rosario is bad defensively. Like, he's genuinely bad. If I can have Adam Eaton not play center field, if I can have him play left.
Well, that was part of his value in Chicago, his last Chicago stint, is they shifted him to right, and he had just these great defensive metrics since he wasn't being asked to play center field mm-hmm. anymore. And so that was part of the, oh, Adam Eaton's better than you
think. I mean, in 2016, he was set, like, according to WARP, right, WARP for BP, uh-huh. he was a 7-win player. And he was a 3-win player in 2019. Like, he is the most boring, really solid player in the league. And I also understand that a lot of people don't really like him. Right? Uh-huh. And I don't want to say, like...
No, that's part of it, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that's like... Ender Inciarte was this guy for me for a couple of years as well. It was like high average, mm-hmm. 15 stolen bases and a bunch of runs. Like, just put it in. That's fine. And I don't have to spend anything for it. Let's go. And Adam Eaton has been that guy for me for the last few years as well. And it's really been down to injuries. But in 2019, he was great.
Well, I'm excited to learn this about you, the driver of the Adam Eaton bandwagon.
I'm sure that won't be problematic at all.
So they made it, the White Sox made another move, though. They traded Dane Dunning for Lance Lynn. And obviously, this is the one that I was referring to when I say for this uh-huh. year, I think it's a no-brainer. Uh-huh. And I think Lance Lynn is a lot better. And Lance Lynn is, you could say the same thing about Adam Eaton of, I don't know if people understand how good Lance Lynn has been the last couple yep. of years. There's a chance this could come back to hurt the White Sox. Definitely not in a James Shields, Fernando Tatis way, but they could not look, this could turn out to be not great for them in the next 2-3 seasons, but I don't think they care about that. I think that they're just looking at, all right, we're pushing in, we're trying to compete this season, and Lance Lynn's definitely going to help them do that. He's immediately the second best, if not, or like, if at least third best, if not second best pitcher in their rotation right now. And that's just because of how good Giolito and Keuchel have been. Does this change any value for Lynn aside from maybe getting a few more wins? Or do you just pencil him in for logging a bunch of innings, striking out, you know, maybe 10 per 9 and having a decent ERA?
It doesn't change it too much. I think actually pitching in Texas was probably good for him just because of mm-hmm. the new stadium. But I know that you've been really high on Lynn these past couple of years. So talk to me about how you think he fits in terms of fantasy, in terms of like the starting pitcher landscape.
Yeah, well, a couple of things in his favor. He's going to get to face the AL Central mm-hmm. a bunch, and he's not going to have to face the White Sox lineup in that AL yeah. Central. So he's going to get a huge chunk of his games against the Tigers, the Royals, and against Cleveland. So first of all, the step back in competition is going to be in Lynn's favor. Pretty much since he came back, in 2018, he pitched for, I think it was 2018 was the Yankees and Twins year, right?
Yes.
after his injury. So pretty much since then, he's been just subtly shifting the kind of guy, the kind of pitcher he is. He's been getting more swings and misses along the way. And then when he went to Texas, a lot of people were scratching their heads about giving Lance Lynn a 3-year deal just after a decent stint in New York. But he's been getting even more whiffs. Like 2019 was a career high swinging strike rate. 2020 was his second best swinging strike rate, even though it took a little bit of a dip. But that was always sort of the thing with Lynn, was he's going to throw a lot of innings. He might not strike a ton of guys out, but that's okay because the bulk is going to be there and the rates are going to be there. And now he's just added the strikeouts to his game. So he's just a well-rounded, if not ace, the fantasy ace, then just that one level below that standard. He's getting a little older, but I would still feel comfortable being that high on him for this season at least, and then kind of recalibrate once he ostensibly goes to a new team. But yeah, I think Lynn is really good, and I don't necessarily know if he's treated that way in the fantasy marketplace.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I was very, very skeptical of Lynn coming into not only 2018 but 2019. I was not a big fan of him coming out of St. Louis after 2017 when he signed with Minnesota. And then the fact that he was bad that year, I think, confirmed it so much that I didn't really believe 2019.
Yeah, he was better when he went to New York, even if his ERA wasn't
great. Right, but that was what, like less than 10 starts or something like that? I don't have the numbers.
Yeah, it was nine starts, okay, 11 appearances. Yeah, but he was really good for them down the stretch.
I was going to say, I didn't have the split numbers in front of me. But then I really adjusted my thinking to, in 2020, was much more in on him and was a kind of...
In on,
yes,
Lynn?
Yes. Good. Good man. but it was one of those things that I was like, you could see he was going away from his fastball a little bit more. Right, he was throwing his slider a lot more. Yep. He was starting to get a lot more swinging strikes. He was not so reliant on just having dudes just beat the ball into the ground a bunch, but he's still been able to stay away from the homers. And he is one of the, as we talk about starting pitchers throwing fewer and fewer innings, he is one of the guys across baseball right now that teams are still willing to just let him be a workhorse. And that, I think, in terms of just innings-wise, if you can get 200 innings from a starting pitcher and they're going to strike out over a batter per inning, and you get...
That's a huge, huge
And
advantage.
You get rates from it? Like, yeah, I can't say a lot, but I had to really adjust how I thought about him last year. Because in 2019, I was still down on him and was very much like, look, I'm not sure I believe this yet. Which, to be fair, actually made me miss out on a couple of opportunities that I probably could have gotten Lance Lynn and just didn't.
Sorry,
man. That's okay. It's my own fault. You don't gotta apologize for that. I come around on it.
Well, let's talk about Dane Dunning. It's probably better for him, say in a similar sense where we talked about Nate Lowe, of the Rangers just being bad and they can kind of just see how things go and just trot out a guy like Dane Dunning to make starts without having to feel a lot of pressure to win games. He was, you know, pretty good in his debut, and I think that getting a spot in a young rotation, you know, and they can sit under the wisdom tree of Kyle Gibson and he can just teach him some things.
What a tree that is.
But I think that'll be a positive, and I could easily imagine a scenario when in 3 years Dane Dunning is just a solid guy that you can rely on in real life and in fantasy, and you're like, man, wouldn't the White Sox like to have a guy like that in their rotation? So yeah, I think this is another one of those where it's probably just a win-win. and a fair trade.
Yeah. I'm not as high on Dane Dunning as I think some folks are. I don't really see a scenario in which, you know, people are in Chicago are going to be upset they lost Dane Dunning. I think he could.
I think that situation already exists.
We talked about that. Yeah, I forgot about that. I think it's much more of a scenario in which, like, Dane Dunning is potentially solid for a few years. I still have very big concerns about in terms of how he's going to handle lefties. I hadn't really thought about Dane Dunning actually in a while coming into 2020. And so I had to kind of like recalibrate and look back at some things, and it's much more like his off speed stuff is good enough that he can miss some bats. But like when it comes down to it as well, there were some concerns about his ability against lefties. And last year, his first couple of outings, or like his first month, I think it was basically like August, he was excellent. And then September, he was just like super mediocre. But against lefties last year, he was like bad. And his whip against lefties last year was 1.5. And like walked a lot, like had almost a 12% walk rate against lefties, was still one of those things in which still wasn't. Yes, he was striking guys out because he's got like the off-speed stuff to make it happen. But if you're still looking at what is going to kind of be a long-term trend for him, I still think he is going to be one of those that teams are going to recognize it, load up on lefties, and he's going to potentially have some problems. So if he can figure out a way to handle lefties a little bit better, maybe he's kind of your perennial mid-rotation guy. But as of right now, I wouldn't really expect him to be more than a back-end starter who can eat a lot of innings and potentially have some blow-up games.
Yeah, and that's what, I mean, we've talked, especially in real life, about how useful that is to have like a third starter, fourth starter that can do something like that. And so I think that that's going to be useful for the Rangers down the road. I don't think that he's going to be like this dominant fantasy guy, but I think he'll be fine. He'll pitch innings, and if he figures out lefties, then we can readjust our expectations. But until then, he's another one he's probably fine.
Like, but what's somebody that you would compare him to value wise? Not like in terms of, you know, I'm not asking for a comp in terms of his long-term production, but in terms of thinking about what he could be value-wise, what are you thinking?
Long-term?
Or just like, or not like, yeah, I guess kind of best case scenario in the next couple of years. Like, what are you looking at?
I think he could be But the first thing that crossed my mind, and I didn't want to bring it up, I was like, I wonder, let's see, a lot of innings, maybe a few strikeouts. Marco Gonzalez, the patron saint of Tino. I don't have one off the top of my head, but I think that maybe like good Mike Leake.
Interesting. Okay.
Or, like,
I mean, that
worse Jameson Taillon.
Okay. Like it to me, it just seems to me like, I don't know. This could be wrong. Like, I've got extreme like Tanner Roark vibes. Like, not in terms of
that's what I think. I sort of think that Tanner Roark is good Mike Leake.
I mean, that very well could be. I mean, obviously they're not quite the same player in terms of, you know, their overall pitch mix and stuff and whatnot. And like Tanner Roark doesn't miss as many bats as Dane Dunning. But like, I also think he's going to walk more guys than Tanner Roark. But you're kind of middle of the road. Like Tanner Roark, 30 starts, kind of what, like 4.3 ERA over a long period of time, was just going to like be somebody you could rely on over a long period of time.
Yeah, so he's like the last person that you would have on your fantasy staff before streaming.
Or like turning to middle relievers or something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. I think to me, Dane Dunning on the fantasy market is going to be valued way higher than that. I would be 100% looking to move Dane Dunning if I had him.
I guess we probably don't have to spend too much time in Carlos Santana going to Kansas City.
I think that we should for your sake, because he's your boy.
We can just quickly work things out. He'll continue to be good in OBP leagues. He'll hit for some power, and he'll make me sad. So I think that that's all we need to say. He's getting older, so not necessarily the dynasty dude that he maybe was in years past in OBP leagues, but yeah, it's just a bummer.
Do you conceive of a possibility that he returns to his 2019 form?
Yeah.
So like,
well, or okay, so no, 2019 he was his like just ball
when he was
out
all, yeah, season. When he was basically a 280 hitter, right? Cuz like for the long time we're just like he's going to hit 25-30 homers, he's going to get you, you know, 80 to 90 runs batted in.
I think he's going to be closer to 250 than to 280. Okay. Like, so yeah, so no, like his that season was just like next level. Like strikeouts and walks, 34 home runs. I think he's going to be 25-30 home runs, hitting maybe 260, 255, but much better in OBP leagues.
And do you think with having people like Salvi Perez, having, you know, Mondesi there, things like that, he's still going to have plenty of opportunities to drive in runs?
Well, I don't think Mondesi is like a beacon of like OBP.
No, so but when he's on base, that works, yeah. Right?
Yeah, he'll have decent counting stats. I don't think that he'll be that much different of a player, but I just, it's a bummer having and going to a division rival and getting to, well, it's nice to get to watch him, but it's also sucks that he's not on my favorite team.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And I would also say that for as much as, like, I'm not 100% sure people recognize, like, how good Mondesi was in the second half last year. Like, even just the last month or whatever. Like, yes, he was brutal early, but he was a flipping superstar in...
Yeah, he worked his way back into, like, top 2-3 round contention, probably.
Because even... previously, right? Like, yes, he doesn't walk very much, but it was basically like, is he going to hit 270 with 40 plus stolen bases? And in September last year, dude hit what? Sorry, let me actually look up the exact numbers.
He was on pace for something just ungodly stolen
in September. He hit 356 with a 408 on base percentage. He had an OPS of over 1,000. His slugging percentage was .667 plus a ton of stolen bases. Like, he was a fun, like, he was otherworldly then.
Yeah, they're gonna be way more fun. And then, like, once Lindor gets traded, then it's gonna be, like, hard to watch this Cleveland team, especially since they have aspirations of kinda sorta straddling defensive contention. So, that'll be cool. I'm excited. So let's talk about one more trade piece, and that's a dynasty trade piece. And you made a trade in TDGX.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That I liked.
Me too.
And obviously you liked. What was the deal?
So I sent Spencer Turnbull and I got Luis Camposano back. So Camposano obviously made the big leagues, but he's still, you know, catching prospect. But he is one of those guys that if he hits, he is a potential top five dynasty catcher, right? Like, he is somebody that can carry at the position. He's somebody that can hit for power and average. He is one of the best catching prospects, if not the best catching prospect. I would assume Rutschman probably better. But you're still in a position in which he is one of the guys that you want. And for me, Turnbull is very, I had plenty of kind of like middling pitching in that league. So Turnbull is valuable if you need innings. I didn't. To me, like, Turnbull is kind of, you know, he's Dane Dunning-esque.
He's whatever.
Actually, like, he's Dane Dunning-esque, I think, is maybe not the worst, the worst example. So yeah, to me, I felt like I was in a position in which I didn't need the innings. Campusano is somebody that I would say is probably a top 300-ish dynasty prospect. I wouldn't say that, top 300 overall guy. Obviously, he is a top 300 dynasty prospect. So for me, Turnbull is kind of a top 450 guy, where I actually have Campusano a little bit higher than some folks. So for me, it was a pretty easy trade.
Yeah, and I think it was for MJ Melendez when I was writing the fantasy for the Royals. Is I'm working on this theory that dynasty catchers, catching prospects, are kind of like Highlander, where like there can be only one. And I sort of think, especially in one catcher leagues, like, I don't know what are we doing here? Like, this guy that maybe is going to be good, like, it seems more so like a pitcher, a pitching prospect, where you just want to chase ace upside because there's going to be those middling guys. And so my current stance on the theory is that Adley Rutschman is the only dynasty catching prospect. Campusano puts a little bit of a wrinkle in there because I think he's very good also, but in one catcher leagues, it's just so risky to gamble on catchers, and I would take that gamble on a guy like Campusano, especially if it only costs Spencer Turnbull, because I think that he could be very good. But yeah, I just wanted to toss that out there also.
So I sympathize with that view. The one thing that I would say is my take on catching prospects, because I think I for a long time had overvalued them just because I like catching prospects in real life. I think the value of a good catcher is underappreciated. But I think I allowed that to kind of bleed a little bit too much into fantasy, where I overvalued it a little bit too much. But at the same time, I've now gotten to this more of this opinion where it's like, if I'm looking at a dynasty catcher, if they never caught a game and would be at a different position, would I still want that bat?
Yeah, that's a
good
way to look at
it. And for me, Campusano is still profiles as a guy that, yeah, I'd like, he'd be much more of like your, you know, if he was a corner infielder, right? He'd be like your CI or somebody like that, right? Mm-hmm. He's not somebody that you would want to necessarily start, but he has the skills to get you what you want. It's a little bit like, I think the fact that Dalton Varsho was a prospect the last couple of years has kind of helped sharpen that, right? Like, it was Varsho. Yeah. It's like, yes, he's a catcher and that's fine, but even if he's not, you want him. And I think like that's a really useful way to think about dynasty catchers. And I'm still in a position where I like Campusano quite a bit, so I'm hoping that it hit comes through. I'm a little bit hoping he doesn't get rushed to the big leagues a little bit too much, but who knows what San Diego's going to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have, I guess Castro is probably leaving, but they still have Nola, so they probably can take their time a little bit with him.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here, let's second guess Jeff. Yes. Real quick. He got a question today in the chat. The Colonel from Pasadena gave him a couple either ors, Dane Dunning or Christian Javier.
Oh goodness.
Big Dane Dunning episode.
Also, the Colonel, that made me think of that new Lifetime movie that is sponsored by KFC.
Oh, with
AC yeah, Mario Slater. Lopez. Yeah. It was which, by the way, I don't know if David Weirs listens to this, but I'm in a group chat with him that I talk to him regularly, and he was like unironically being like, I'm watching this. And I was like, do not encourage them to do this more. Like, do not do it. And he is he's saying it is actually going to be must watch viewing party for him, which I'm a little upset about this whole thing. So hopefully it's not that
cool. Well, I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know if it's unironic. I think it's still, I think there's still a layer of irony when you're watching something like that.
But when I'm looking at what we've got for somebody like Dane Dunning, the biggest thing to me about Javier is I think he's useful enough. And the biggest thing to me is it does seem like Houston wants to do like with your Javier's, your Josh James's, your, you know, Framber Valdez, your Jose Urquidy. Like, they want a bunch of guys that are going to go about 130 innings and be like two times through the order guys. And yes, Javier like expanded his ability a little bit above that. But at the same time, I would probably go with Dunning just because I felt more confident that in the innings.
Yeah.
But I actually don't think they are that different skill wise.
Yep. And it's nice that after all this trash you've talked about Dane Dunning, that you're finally making it up to him by taking him over Christian Javier.
Okay, so now what are you going to say something nice about Adam Eaton now, or are we just like done on that?
No, we're done on that. Cool. So the other one was Brady Singer or Tristan McKenzie.
Oh, I'm going to make you go first on that one. I don't know.
So I like Tristan McKenzie more, but also the whole before 2020 didn't pitch for like 3 years thing is tough to get
but
over.
You were like, you were unbelievably out on Tristan McKenzie 12 months ago.
Well, because he like just didn't pitch in, he like didn't pitch in games, which is kind of important if you're like a pitcher and stuff.
Right. So like what did he started what, 6 games, and now you're like, "Oh, maybe he is pitching again."
It's 6 more games than he pitched since 2018.
I guess. Well, I just say that because I actually still liked Tristan McKenzie a little bit last year.
Yeah,
but I will say that I actually didn't keep him in a league prior to last year, so I don't have him anymore, and I was sad about that.
So are you going with McKenzie?
Well, I don't
also?
Know. Oh, so McKenzie is your answer?
Yeah,
I felt like you didn't actually have an answer there.
I think I am more confident in strikeouts with McKenzie. I'm definitely not more confident in health, but I gotta hold on to the things that make me happy, and seeing Tristan McKenzie pitch made me happy, so I'm going with him.
Okay. I think for me, I'd probably just go with Singer. I think he's going to be a little bit more boring. I think if I were talking about prospects, if I were talking about low A guys, I think I would want McKenzie, no question. But the fact that I can basically roll with Singer now and know that he's going to be a dude who just gets like a ton of ground balls, he's not going to strike out a ton of people, but I can find strikeouts elsewhere. Am I going to get a guy who's going to start 30 games if healthy and just be solid enough? Yeah. Am I still sure that like Tristan McKenzie can throw more than 4 innings in a game? No. right? Like, you're still looking at somebody that even just in last year, right about like 3rd or 4th inning, like his velocity just crashed. You're still looking at somebody that, like, I'm not 100% sure he's going to be able to be a starter long-term.
No, and I'm not either, but he was extremely fun, and those things are fewer and farther between in Cleveland these days. So I'm picking him just out of
my head. Well, I was going to say, if you're asking me which one do I want to be better, it's McKenzie, no question. Like, McKenzie's tons of fun.
Well, and also, you forgot to mention that Brady Singer is going to be able to sit under that wisdom tree of Danny Duffy.
Oh, I didn't know there was a wisdom tree of Danny Duffy as well. I just thought it was Kyle Gibson.
Mm-hmm. No, it's also Danny Duffy's got a tree. And so does Mike Minor.
I'm going to need a fantasy freestyle on this.
The landscape of
I'm going
all
to need
the wisdom
to know
trees.
Who has a tree and who doesn't have a tree. Because if
that's fair,
because this seems to me to have pretty strong ramifications for young pitchers.
Right. Yeah. Well, you gotta learn somewhere. And if it's just all young pitchers, then what are we doing here? But if there's a tree, then
and
now we're
if
talking.
If you could, sorry, a Hamilton reference. Are you going to be able to get this?
Okay. No, but that doesn't matter.
So there is a piece in it in which George Washington is talking about sitting under his own fig tree, and because he wants to be able to bask in you know the country that they've made, and it seems to me, sometimes everybody needs a tree to sit under. You know.
Yeah, that's very profound. And probably a good place to wrap up today, unless you have any more pearls of wisdoms or aphorisms
you
want to drop.
No, my
on
only
us.
Other question was going to be, do you have a tree that we're all basking under at BP?
No.
Like Jeff does for the prospect team.
Yeah, Jeff definitely does.
Craig
Jeff's
does
got a
not.
Tree. Craig, no tree for Craig. Maybe John does. John probably has a tree, John Hagelin.
I would imagine so.
I think there's probably stuff
Mike
we can learn
does.
From him.
Mike has his own grove of trees that we all sit under. That basically it's right. Like, I need to talk about valuation. Well, I better see what Mike says. Like,
yeah, why plant my own tree when I can right? just go sit under Mike?
It always comes down to whatever we're saying is like, everyone's like, I need a concept of like how good so-and-so is. Everyone's like, what does Mike think? And we all get into it. So yes, good.
All right, well, that's it for us this week. Next week, we'll be back. I'll talk a little bit more about horticulture and about trees and such. Hopefully, there will be some trades between now and then, and maybe even in one or more of our dynasty leagues, and we can just kind of break that down. It's slow on the hot stove, but it's always hot on the Tino podcast. So we'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening. You guys are the best.